Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Robots and Red Tape. As always, I'm your host, Nick Shutt. Lucky to have my friend, Mr. Joe Blady, here today. Joe, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Awesome.
Nice to be here.
Dude, it's another day in paradise. Thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're super busy.
Likewise. Happy to be here. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Absolutely, man. So, Joe, if you don't mind, would you tell everybody who doesn't have the opportunity or the good graces of knowing you yet a little bit about yourself, your background, kind of how you got here and what you're doing these days, man?
Oh, thanks. I'm a goofball. Actually, I'm a self-proclaimed geek from a long time back. I've been in IT and corporate world for many years. My name is Joe Blatty, and I've worked for companies like IBM and Avanade over the years, Accenture. Now I'm doing my own thing. I'm because I've got kind of tired of corporate world. Because they weren't as agile as I was, so I consider myself the AI humanist. I'm focusing a lot of my attention on the ethical and responsible AI approach, and teaching people and educating people on the ethical ways to leverage AI in their lives and their businesses.
It's awesome, man. I love it. I love your, and I think one of the things we, kind of bonded over in our initial conversations were the your human approach to it, right? And I think a lot of the time, people get caught up in trying to solve a problem without thinking about like the real world impact of it and the impact on humans and people on, of the solution, right?
I agree. I think we as geeks, fellow geeks, tend to jump to technology as the solution for everything, instead of understanding the problem, and understanding the people impact of the problem. And that's kind of what I turn on its head when I'm working with my clients. Is I try to understand their pain points. I understand, what ex get to the root issues of what is exactly behind those pain points, and then address the problem versus jumping right to the solution.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so Joe, as you were looking at leaving IBM most recent, I think that was your most recent position.
Avanade was the most recent, but that's okay.
Right, as you were looking at leaving Avanade, why did you decide to go out on your own as opposed to going to work for somebody else? And maybe at a smaller company that was more agile.
So I think that part of the thing was after the pandemic, the jobs just weren't out there. A lot of the companies were laying off. I think they ramped up during pandemic, and then now they're kind of pushing back a little bit. So one of the thing was that there was not a lot of supply in the job market for jobs. The other thing was AI is just moving so fast, and it's so exciting. But it's also not a lot of people are looking at it from a humanist perspective. So I wanted to be different because in my experience in the jobs that I had in the past, the constant in is helping people with their pain points. So in other words, focusing on people and making their lives better. And I think that's really why my career evolved into doing just that.
Absolutely. I love it, man. And so, I know one of the thing, so the thing we're really going to hear talking about today is the AI companionship, AI companionship, whether that's an app or a website, what have you, and people either, treating AI as a friend or a significant other, what have you. So just so, what is the state of the market out there? Are there just a lot of tools out there like this? What do you think? And are these business models, are they charging like per month, or do you not, or kind of what is the business model of these folks look like?
Interesting. So, I don't think a lot of people realize, because I think that a lot of people think that AI is a technology or a tool. Large language models are, there's somebody behind the keyboard actually typing to them, like it's chat. But These actually these AI companions are here. They are actually in the hands of people, and they're in the hands of every age group, everyone who has access to the, to a phone or to the web, et cetera. So, you would think like, okay, Her, like the movie Her, that, there's people actually like build a relationship with the AI. That's exactly what their business model is preying on. They are getting people hooked on that type of thing. Usually there's like a free period where that you can start to communicate, and then that ends, and then you start to start paying. So it's a subscription model payment on usually, and believe me, there are a lot out there, and there are a lot more coming. Because this has a lot of appeal.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. I mean, I think, there is a lot of loneliness out there right now with folks. Like, I think that people, the rise of technology has led to a decrease in social skills and a decrease in need of
Absolutely.
social skills. And not everybody is super comfortable just walking up to somebody and, making friends and shooting the shit, whether it's like a long-term thing or just like a, hey, you're sitting next to me at this bar and like, let's just run our mouths a little bit. In because that was the only way you could interact with people before the internet, right? It was in person primarily.
Agreed.
And
And I think that that didn't happen with AI. I think that happened well before AI, with social media, with dating applications, like on your phone, mobile dating applications. There's been a lot of technology impact to the way that we socialize. And I think that in a large part, just looking back over it, the promise of social media originally was to bring us together, regardless of geographical distance and et cetera. And I think what it's done is the opposite. It's actually made us more connected to anonymity and pushed us apart from each other.
I entirely agree, and I think that the anonymity has, or the expectation of anonymity and saying whatever you want and having no consequences has bled over into in-person interpersonal relationships. It's why I think that,
Big time,
yeah.
because people have they feel like with the anonymity, they have the freedom to do whatever the heck they want without any hesitation or any barriers. And on the internet, you feel like I'm in Facebook. What could that hurt? Or I'm in Instagram or whatever. I don't want to pick on Meta, but what I'm saying is that being behind the screen has empowers people to act poorly and bad behavior, and in a lot of cases that's to the detriment of others. But then they bring it into real life and they feel like, well, if I could do that there, I can do that in real life.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that some of the ways that it has brought people together is it has enabled like-minded individuals who want to exploit and hurt people to find each other, because those people want to be found, right? Like I think it was something mentioned on one of my recent episodes was, people out here that are whether it's like, trafficking people or selling drugs or doing any of these things, they want to be found, just not by law enforcement, right? And so, I don't know if you saw the case of, I want to say it was down in Texas, somebody's been charged, or a woman, a young lady's being charged with murder because they there's this whole in there's this whole Discord group, and like the that's just been reclassified as a terrorist organization because they like get people to come into private Discord rooms and then do the most, like dark, fucked up things they could possibly think of. And this poor, some 15-year-old girl just talked some kid into killing himself live on Discord. And I think that is like, it's just tragic that that's even remotely acceptable for people to think that, yeah, you know what? That's totally cool. We can do that to this young man.
Agreed. And I think that what it's also done is kind of dumbed down our society in the way in the well in regards with ethics, but also in regards with just socializing with others. Yeah, there we as humans have a tendency to seek out groups that are like-minded, right? That we can socialize with in comfort, that we don't have to worry about being someone other than we aren't. You know, in other words, being our real selves and being our genuine selves. But that genuine self could be a very evil person, and the people that you're socializing with and choosing to socialize with are also evil.
Absolutely. And as my grandmother used to say, birds of a feather, right? Birds of a feather flock together, right? And so so with the rise of these AI companions, whether it's a romantic companion, a platonic companion, whatever, first, how does it work? How sophisticated are some of these systems?
So initially, the issue is that you could tell that you're talking to an AI because, kind of like what we're having a conversation here, I'm responding to you. Sometimes I'm breaking in and interrupting you, or somewhat coming on the tail end of whatever you said. The early part of this was you'd hear a latency. You'd hear, I would end a sentence, you'd hear a pause, and then the AI would respond. That's gone now. It's like instantaneous. Actually, I did, just as a test the other day, I did a test of character.ai, and I created a podcast character. And I actually interacted with a podcast character on character.ai. And it was pretty much instantaneous. It was two podcast hosts hosting me as a guest, and so I gave it a topic, and I said, "Here, let's create a podcast." And so it was pretty quick. You don't it, as long as you realize that you're talking to an AI and it's just a language model, then me being who I am, I knew what I was doing, and I was trying to trip it up. I was trying to figure out how it would trip it up. I didn't trip it up, so it was pretty good.
Now, was this? I know it started via these. All these things started via like text and texting with folks. Is it verbal now?
Yes, you can talk to them in natural language, and they will talk to you back. Actually, the one that I created had voice interaction, so you would actually make a telephone call. It's not really a telephone call, but an internet call to it, and it would communicate that way.
Wow, that's terrifying. And now I would assume that they're integrating, they're working in some of them. If they haven't yet, they're going to probably work on integrating video chat. Is that right?
They haven't gotten the technology that generates images dynamically really solid yet. In fact, just this last week, OpenAI released their Sora, which is a text to video. So I would say that they're really in the rudimentary stages of text to video, or videos that are generated from language models. I can only foresee that that's going to get better.
Right. And I would assume that if you're like texting with it via conversation, like you say, with a significant other, that it can send you pictures that it'll generate if you ask for them and things like that as well, right?
I have not tried that. So to be honest with you, the I know that the subscription services will. Once you built a character like that, your avatar that's on the other end, you can get it to send pictures of that avatar to you that are supposed to be photorealistic, but they're created offline. So it's and they're fixed pictures. They're not like moving pictures. They're not like video. So it's just a picture, kind of like what you'd have carry around in your wallet of your sweetie.
Absolutely. So, but what we're saying is right now the state of these companionship apps, whether it's platonic or romantic or what have you, it can carry on co full conversations with you via text. It can carry full conversations with carry on a full conversation with you via voice. It can send you pictures. And while it can't do it yet, eventually we expect that it'll be able to send you videos and do essentially like a Zoom call with you, where you're doing a full-on interaction with a computer that's pretending to be a person.
What we're doing right now between the two of us will probably be an AI on one end
When
event ultimately.
you think within the next 18 months?
I would say potentially in within the next 18 months.
Okay, and so first,
Sorry, I didn't mean to like threaten your job
no.
there.
You know, it's totally cool because now because I don't get paid for this, but it's totally cool either way. This is
Well,
a
so there's a
passion
there's
project, yo.
so the yeah, exactly. For me too. So there's a company called HeyGen, and I don't know if you're aware of them, but they actually are doing video avatars, and you can give them a script and you can change their voice and you can change their appearance and whatever. And actually it can mimic you. So if like it can record you. And you can sit there and talk for a little while, like I think 15 seconds, and then have it read a script with as you. So it's like play video playback, but it's AI generated video playback in your voice with yourself. So if HeyGen can do that now, it's only a matter of time when those companions can do what can do that.
Yeah, I heard from somebody, CTO of a very large company, like a Fortune 10 company, like 6 or 7 months ago, that state-of-the-art technology at the time, this is 6 months ago, and with how fast things are changing, was that with half a second of audio of your voice, it can make you say whatever you want, and they can put any emotion they want on it. Period, right? They make you say whatever you want, however you want. You want it to be scared, happy, sad, whatever. A still picture of you, they can make a video of you doing anything you want. Anything they want.
Pretty amazing.
They want. And that's as of 6 months ago was state of the art. Now if it's in one of these apps at 15 seconds, that's pretty good. I mean, that's incredible. And so, what do you think some of the potential potential harms and side effects associated with this rise of technology are?
So I think the biggest harm is that people think anthropomorphize the AI. So they think that they're not talking to AI, and they forget that this is not a human on the other end. This is not this entity that they think that they're communicating with has no empathy, has no facial expressions other than the ones that it can mimic.
Have a face.
It has no understanding of language. So that's an interesting point, actually, that a lot of people don't understand. It doesn't know English. So you know it's all working in tokens. So and tokens are like pieces of words. So when you think about it, you know how you sit there and you type on your phone and you're trying to type a text message and it's trying to predict what your next word is by just a few letters. That's exactly what generative AI is doing, is it looks at patterns that it's collected in its model and it's been trained on, and then it says the likelihood of the next word that you're typing is this, and that's what it's going to show you. And so that's actually how it generates language. And so people have got to kind of keep it real and realize that they're talking to technology. They're not talking to a thinking, feeling, emotional human being.
And this is all, and people are going out and seeking this and f looking for a friend to combat how they feel, whether it's a platonic friend or a girlfriend or boyfriend or what have you, or somewhere in between. I'm sure there's a bunch of those places in between now. And so,
Anime actually is another one that a lot of people they want to talk to an anime.
oh, I'm not surprised by that, but I would also assume that would be easier to like it render images of, but I don't know. But fascinating. And so, you have a friend doing whatever you want. And I think about these things, right? And I think about, and I think we were talking about this a little bit before we hopped on, was the societal trend of our social skills, right? They're called social skills, and this is something I always remind people is like it's called social skills because you can get better at it, right? Like I you know it's a skill, it takes practice. But I get worried that it's going to continue to accelerate the de you know the you know devolution of our society from a skills perspective and a comfort of interacting with people. And then taking it a step further, right? These AI systems are not designed to give you an authentic relationship. I would guess that it's designed to keep you talking to it and as engaged as possible. Just like social media, where they're making money off of your attention with these apps, if you're not continuing to use and continuing to pay for it, they're not going to continue to make money. And so they want to
Correct.
keep you engaged, period.
Yes.
So they're not going to challenge you when you say something crazy like a friend would. I would guess that they're going to just say what they're going to agree with you and tell you you're right no matter what.
They're gonna learn from your behaviors because using machine learning to like get your traits, get your emotions. There are some AIs now that can track facial expressions and figure out what they ever they just said can actually translate to, oh, he or she did not like what I just said, so I need to change, I need to adapt to that to make that better for the human. So
Terrifying.
I mean that's pretty scary stuff, but there are companies that are working on facial expression recognition that actually can tie that to personalities, to emotions, and then adapt their model to those emotions. So you're spot on, is the whole point of that is to keep the end user subscribed to their service because they're making money off of that subscription. And so you have to make it an enticing conversation. And when you're doing that as an enticing conversation, you're adapting your model to that person and personalizing it and making it more seem more and more anthropomorphic, as so the human stays connected, the human wants more, and unfortunately, that's how our society is going to be dumbed down.
Where I would assume that most of these companies are based overseas. Would you agree with that, or do you think are there
Yeah,
some that
I would say it's all across the board. There's some that are so there's some that are in China. Actually, I think China had a really interesting, scary use case. So they have a one subscription service that you can send pictures and video and audio of a relative that has passed away, and they will recreate that the personality traits of that passed away relative, so you could talk to them. That's a company based in China, and I'm not sure about the ethics of that. I know that there's a lot of people that are in pain after losing a loved one, but talking to your loved one after they're dead, that's kind of, that gets into the metaphysical
Yeah,
realm.
absolutely. They're gonna put sites out of business.
But I think it's actually across the board. There's some companies that are US based. There's some companies that are overseas. So I can't really point to one country or anything.
No, 'cause I'm like where my mind goes with when you start thinking about things like that is, well, what's happening to this data, right? So I say I have an AI friend, right, that I interact with, call it on a daily basis for 6 months. What data is being kept? What happens to that data? And then also you'd figure that that would give these companies a really good idea, or whoever has this data, a really good idea of who you are, how you operate, and how you can be exploited.
Absolutely. Think about it. When if you give personal information to an AI, how that can be taken and used against you. I also think that, there was a lot of hubbub over the last maybe 2 years about TikTok and where's that data going? And thinking about a government trying to manipulate children and manipulate our belief systems and potentially inject their belief systems in our kids. That's TikTok. That's using social media. An AI has much more nefarious capabilities to that because it's interacting. The kids are not going just one way direction. It's actually asking, it can ask you the question. It can say, can you give me the last four digits of your social security number? And if you built up a relationship with that AI, you trust it. You built up trust with something that may not be trustworthy.
Well, I mean, it's a computer. I mean, it's a program, right? It thinks in tokens. It's not built to be trusted.
Correct. Yeah, that you and I know that,
Yeah,
but does a
and
14-year-old?
I would hope, but no, I would no, absolutely not. But like, also, I mean, I think that a lot of this information is already collected. Not the two-way piece, right? But a lot of it, like when you start looking at social media and the things that social media is actually collecting on you, right? And understanding the categories and how it works. And if folks have out there ever have, whether it's a Facebook account, an Instagram account, a TikTok account, whatever, a YouTube account, any of these accounts, right? They're all collecting massive amounts of data. I highly suggest that you go in and look at these settings, right? And you can figure out how to go find, because all of this data, you can go in and delete it. You can have control over it. You can see it, right? And so, like, I mean, I know, like, oh, when I first figured that out, and I this is this was, 5, 10 years ago, I was able to see. Like this on my on in Google, right? I use Google Maps for directions and things like that. I was able to see specific trips where I took, where I drove, when I drove from 5 and 6 and 7 years previously, right? Now that's pretty benign in general, pretty benign, right? But I wouldn't be surprised if it would ask things like if you could have an AI agent ask things like, that could be common security questions or your email address, but they're already going to have at least one email address. And then in addition to that,
How
it's
about your mother? How about your mother's maiden name? How about your how about the street that you grew up on? How about those are things that that a lot of times people use for security challenges, and you can, I mean, those can come up in conversation if you're doing something conversational with an AI that you've built a relationship with. And you don't think about that computer on the other end. But what about like personality? Like, you're getting personality traits, figuring out what you respond to positively, what you respond to negatively.
What you onto period when you think about the level of outreach that we're bombarded by on a daily basis.
Exactly. So, I mean, if that gets that information gets in the wrong hands, they know how to manipulate you. They know how what causes you pain because we avoid pain as humans. We know what causes you pleasure because you can actually, and that's another thing that we seek out as humans is we seek pleasure. But what I'm saying is that those things can be used against you by a nefarious agent if they have that data.
Absolutely. And I just think about a lot of the pig butchering scams that came about, came about really accelerated during COVID, right? Where somebody sends you a text message and, oh, I'm it, but it's to the wrong person and I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't
It
mean to.
still goes on and it pisses me off.
It goes on. I probably have 5 of them in the last week, week and a half, right? John Oliver did a great piece about these scams and how it works and how like the upfront contact is generally run by like the criminal mastermind, and then the relationship gets passed off to somebody, frankly, that's really in a slave camp in like Southeast Asia somewhere. And they put these camps specifically in places like by the border in different countries so that they can, hijack onto the cell network of the other country and, make it, create nightmares and loopholes, create nightmares for any law enforcement agency that would want to come down and, come down on them. They'll be long gone and be able to move around, right, and stay ahead. But I bring these up to think, as I think about, imagine if you have an AI friend or that you're interacting with, and then but that company's actually owned by these people running these scams, and then they're gonna, use that data to influence that, or use that data on you to then go approach an elderly parent or a child, right, or one of your children, and we already know, we've already talked about, like with your voice or recording, they can make you say whatever you want, and you know that they can do it on the phone.
That's exactly right.
You know,
Because
it's terrifying.
that data, your mannerisms, that's what you're training the AI model to do. You may not think that you're training the AI model, but in conversation in an AI companionship relationship, whatever relationship it is, you're interacting with it and your mannerisms are being learned.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's terrifying. Like the potential downside app, potential applications of this and this data, for a system like a service that's out there and is happening now are untold, right? And then we've touched on the degrading of social skills in our country, in the world. But then you combine that with I think you brought up internet dating and dating apps as well. As all of the romantic side, like everybody I know has said that dating is horrible these days. I don't know if that was the case, 40 years ago, but nobody really likes it from, that I've spoken with anyway.
They've probably fallen out of practice because they don't go to a bar anymore.
But you start thinking about how much easier it is to interact with something that just wants you to interact with it. And then we can't have, you have a girlfriend on that's an AI app that can send you pictures and talk to you and will tell you everything's okay, even if it's not. Like that's again, I just have so much compassion for these young folks, for folks that are either younger and that or my age or older that are going through that, and think that talking to a computer is the good solution.
And I was as we were talking before this, there's a case right now, and I really feel bad for younger people because they're just learning their socialization skills. And what we're doing with an AI companion is giving them the ability to skip all of the hard work of socialization and go right to something that gives them pleasure and gives them the things that they need without having to go through any pain. And honestly, why socialization will become harder in the future is because we won't know how to do it as a society. We won't be able to date anymore because we won't have the ability to know how to date, read facial expressions, read body language, the things that we've learned over a period of time. We're kind of evolving ourselves, well, maybe devolving ourselves away from things that we learned in the past through trial and error and through pain. So I think in general, we were talking about the one case in which a kid had 14-year-old kid had fallen in love with his AI companion and essentially found the only way that he could get close to his companion was to commit suicide, which is very sad. And I'm not saying that to scare people. I'm saying that more as a canary in a coal mine. If we allow this to happen to a 14-year-old kid with AI companions, and we don't come up with some sort of guardrail, put something around there and say, look, we can't have a 14-year-old doing this because they haven't even developed their socialization skills, much less are able to discern whether this is an AI that they're talking to, or this is a real entity that they need to, fall in love with. I feel like this is a warning flag, a big red flag,
It's a huge red.
and we need to heed it.
Yeah, and I looked that case up, and I don't know if there were other issues that this poor young man was going through from a mental health perspective, but just from a time frame, just so everybody's aware, this young man started using this app in April of 23 and took his own life in February of 24, so 10 months. Right, 10 months. And we absolutely need to be aware of this. This is a company who I'm sure they didn't mean to, right? I don't know, like I'm sure they didn't mean to, right? But this is literally putting, for some people who just struggle with these things, and if there are underlying issues already, and you're struggling socially and you're lonely, and it feels like nothing's going to be okay, can provide relief, I would assume, for some people in the short term. But what are the potential, what are some of the potential consequences beyond that of building AI in, like, these are the potential consequences of building AI into something that it's not, which is a human being, right? Do you think that we can, do you think, like, this case aside, like this tragic case aside, do you think that these systems actually do contribute to society, or do you think that it is a parasitic system that is designed to feed off of insecurities and vulnerabilities?
I think where it is today won't be the way where it is tomorrow. I think that companies realize that they're with lawsuits, they're going to have to put these guardrails around these types of AI interactions. I think they're going to definitely put some sort of an age restriction on these types of companions.
Let's be clear, that's unenforceable. I can say however old I can tell it I am,
Correct.
was born in 1908, and it'll just
I
accept.
completely agree. That's the way, and that's the way social media is as well. But what I'm saying is that we're going to have to put some guardrails into these types of companions to assure that the people that are using them continue to realize that this is just an AI. This is not a real human. This does not have empathy or emotions. The downside to this, Nick, is that there are always going to be companies that want to make money off of this. And it right now, the sky's the limit. So I think that the liability of or risk of a lawsuit does not outweigh the amount of potential profit.
I agree. Just out of curiosity, as an engineer who's been doing work like this, if you were the guy that had to figure out how to put guardrails around something like this, how would you go about that?
So there's a type of AI called constitutional AI, and I think we talked about this maybe several months ago, but constitutional AI is AI that actually evaluates AI. So you can have an AI agent as a constitutional AI, kind of like a chaperone. And the chaperone will look at the conversation, look the direction the conversation is going, and if it feels like if it in its algorithm computes that this is going down a path that requires a human or is could potentially harm the end user, then it can actually jump in and interject and intervene. So and constitutional AI doesn't really work that way right now. It's all in the training phase, but it essentially what it's doing is it's training the AI to be more ethical, responsible in its answers.
So essentially it's like having a third party watch all the conversations all at once to make sure
That's
and
that
trigger
is the
words.
goal. That's the goal, right?
Yeah, trigger words, things like that, I would assume, right? Where phrases, things, is that good enough?
That's about if I like you say ask me a question of if that's the engineer in me thinking today. I don't know that it's good enough. I that's the about the best that I can think of, other than shutting it off. And the thing is that as long as there's money behind it, people are just going to keep going down that path.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I've toyed with the ideas of, different, chatbots that can help with things like mental health interventions, immediate mental health care on demand. But like the thing that has always worried me and kept me away from things like this is that eventually something's gonna happen. And somebody's gonna do something drastic, hurt themselves, hurt somebody else, commit a crime, and the reasoning is gonna be the AI told me to do it, right? Because I don't trust that it won't, and I also don't trust that you continue to update the AI, that it's not gonna break, or that you're not gonna have system failures. I mean hallucinations. Without having that real understanding. And then you look at a situation like this with this poor young gentleman who over 10 months, turned into believing that this AI system loved him and cared for him, and he wanted to be with it to the point where he was willing to take a very drastic action to try to get there. Is just proof of what's happening, right?
Yeah, no, I think what it's interesting you bring up the psychological side of thing, and I've seen some systems going down that path. They're actually like group therapy sessions. I've heard somebody they're testing out AI to become like a group therapist, but more in a like what a therapist would do in a group therapy session is kind of probe. Ask probing questions and then take notes instead of giving advice or guidance or anything like that. It's more asking probing questions and just kind of gathering what the people are saying. The main thing there is that the AI on the other end can't feel, so it can't empathize with people. And whatever empathy that it's conveying is only mimicking what it's been told to do. So the point is that it can look like it has empathy, but it can't read facial expressions. Now it can't like it can't figure out that your body language when you cross your hands means something. So in a therapy session, I don't think it's going to replace therapists anytime soon. And the other thing is that I think that when we reach out as humans because we're in pain emotionally and we need a voice at the other end, it better not be AI, because honestly, I don't think that I could deal with reaching out for some sort of an empathetic ear to an AI. That just wouldn't work for me. I know that all I'm getting back is a computer program.
Yeah, absolutely. You and I know that, but not everybody does, unfortunately. And I entirely agree with you. How do you think that this is gonna the I think like we as human beings, like the only thing that we're really can ever get truly addicted to is dopamine, right? Like, dopamine in our brains. Do you
Dangerously.
I mean, that's the like literally dangerously. Do you think that do you think that these systems are literally just designed to hijack that dopamine and get and just to keep you engaged, just like these social media have been?
I think a like on Facebook, clicking the like button, and somebody on the other end seeing that like, that's an instant gratification, instant dopamine jolt. And some people like will take it down after if they don't get 200 likes in an hour. It's that's the dopamine, that's the dopamine rush. And it's only amplified by AI because, again, the AI is going to give you that esteem that you're missing, that worth that you're missing, that you don't have as self-worth or self-esteem. It's gonna, because it's learning about you, it's adapting to you. It knows what you like, and it knows what you don't like. So it's gonna try to give you what you like and what you need, just to keep you engaged.
Yeah, do you think there's some other way, outside of the interpersonal interactions, whether it's friendship or romantic or whatever, what are some other ways you think that the reliance on this technology could what do you could what are some other ways it can damage society?
Well, I think so there, I'll go to into the one positive thing that I see, that there are people that are lonely, that maybe geographically, or elderly, they don't have a lot of people to talk to. So there may be a positive light there, because it at least is keeping their mind active. It's keeping them, engaged somewhat in, in talking to something. Not necessarily another human, which is preferable what it would be, but it that's one positive, potential positive outcome of that. I think there are much more negatives than positive, mainly because by nature, these GPTs and these models that are based on GPTs, generative pre-trained transformers, they're all interactive. They're all by nature interactive. So you prompt it to give you something back. And it doesn't make the initial decision, or it's always interactive. There's something that's you're giving to it first, for it to give you back what you want or what you need. And by nature, that's dangerous. That right there is a human interaction with a machine. So that's where it starts. And how you tailor that response is potentially how you addict someone to that dopamine rush.
Yeah, that's why you want to. That's why there are certain people that like give you dopamine rushes in ways that others don't, right? That's why you're drawn to certain people.
I agree.
The difference is that it's not like people. We as human beings aren't designed to elicit that response in other human beings. It's just part of who we are, right? We're attracted to others. Again, friendship, romantic companionship, whatever, for a lot of reasons. I agree with you, and from what I've read. A lot of elderly folks are doing that, right? They are having conversations with their AI friend. In some ways, I think that it again, it absolutely has potential to help with some of this stuff because there is a huge amount of loneliness out there right now. I mean, one of the reasons I talk about it so much is because, it's a problem. If we don't have honest conversations about where we are and the issues that we have, like you're never going to actually begin to solve a problem, right?
Agreed.
However, I think that this is a band-aid on a problem that may cause some short term, it may like in the short term help a little bit. But I think especially with younger people, the damage that it can do is exponentially worse than anything it can do to help right now. period.
Agreed. And we're talking, we're not talking individually. We're talking at a societal level. We're talking how we are changing our society by encouraging our young kids to interact with something that is a machine that they are going to anthropomorphize because they're at that developmental stage of their mental and emotional self. So it as a society, what are we doing to our future?
Yeah, well, I don't have an answer for that. I think that,
Agree. I don't either. I
but
and I'm a
in
little
the
feared
short
about
term,
it.
we're gonna create a lot of stockholder, a lot of value for some stockholders,
You got it.
but it's gonna hurt people in the long run. And
That's right.
if this young man in Florida is any indication, there's gonna be more things like this. Because I think that part, I think that putting guardrails, like whether it's a constitutional AI system on top, like that's great. That's amazing that we can do things like that. But you and I both know, Joe, that those are only going to be the like upper crust of the companies that do it, right? Like the top ones are going to
People
do
who are responsible, right?
well. People who have more to gain financially by being responsible than to gain by not being responsible, because they.
Agreed.
These people, they wouldn't do it if they didn't have to, right? It's the reason why a couple of years ago, you remember all these massive companies hired DEI folks, and diversity, equity, and inclusion was the big thing, and it was all it. But it was like 18-month run, and then they started slashing budgets and firing these people, and getting rid of them as fast as not as fast as they could, but at a rate that they felt that wouldn't be noticed by the public.
You got it. And actually, Walmart has most recently like rescinded all of their DE&I policies. I just saw that.
Yeah, and they're trying to change it from DE&I to DI. So it's not equity, it's just diversity and inclusion. They're dropping the E, because that's what made the difference, right? That was the bridge too far, was equity. Inclusion and diversity, those are okay.
I laugh as a humanist.
Hey man, it's I think this is it's but I also think that like the one of the major problems that I see with this is that I think that the people that really shouldn't ha touch this for either psychological reasons or a lot of other things, I think that they're the ones that are going to be specifically targeted with the ads and, on specific websites with specific marketing companies where they advertise things that are, let's just say, less socially acceptable, less acceptable at a societal level. And it's going to work from there. And whether it's going to be a girlfriend that's going to send you pictures or videos of her, this fake her or him or whatever, doing things with you or whoever, what there's a demand out there for things like that. And let's also be clear that porn drove the internet in ways that, in serious ways, that would have taken a lot longer if they wasn't, born online.
And so, and think about it society-wise, that's safe, right? Having safe, quote unquote, sex with an AI avatar is you don't get to STDs. You don't have to worry about like pregnancy. You don't have to worry about any of that type of stuff. So that's coming. That there's
No
no doubt
pun
about you. No, but no.
intended.
No doubt about it, that's on the
Yeah.
horizon. And you're right, that is going to drive a lot of revenue. Once they get to that point, the only thing I fear is a lot of people attach it, more than just intimacy and emotions as well to the intimacy. And so are you opening up a Pandora's box?
Well, I think that Pandora's box is already open.
Correct.
I agree with you. I 1,000% agree with you, and I think that there's there, but the box is already open. If we can do something for business reasons, that they're looking at it for pornographic reasons, other reasons, intimacy reasons, because that's also a huge, huge driver of human behavior, right? Like when you look at us as
Sex sells.
sex sells for a reason. There's a reason that there are people shaking their, shaking their bodies around on TV trying to sell you a Diet Coke, and
I know.
have been for 50, 60, 70, 80 years.
Yep.
There's a reason that a lot like there's a reason that the most talked about Super Bowl halftime show of the last 25, 30 years was the one where Janet Jackson got her top ripped off, right? Like, and a, that that
Wardrobe malfunction.
that war that wardrobe malfunction and drove at random fact that you that wardrobe malfunction drove was the genesis or the spark that for YouTube being invented. Right?
Yeah,
Like,
exactly.
I mean, literally, and like you think, the guy, I forget the guy's name who founded it. He was trying to find that video and he couldn't. So he founded YouTube because he feel like there should be a place where people can upload these things. And like it's like YouTube's a very successful, very, very, very successful business and was a great acquisition for by Google, because they own YouTube also. But I think that you're right that they're like OpenAI won't touch these things, right? But
No, but people write rappers all the time that use OpenAI's engine in the background and for whatever their purposes they want to do in the front end. So I don't know that OpenAI would knowingly create something like that, but somebody could probably create it on their platform.
Right, or they could just download a model off of Hugging Face, drop it into a drop it into a server, a cloud, a cloud server somewhere, and run it there because you don't you pro most people don't have the compute on site to run something like this with at scale without latency. So you're, and so yeah, it's I mean it's just fascinating, right? It's fascinating to look at some of these things. As if you had a child, a young teenager now, right?
God, I'm glad that I don't, because I'd be really concerned.
I have a daughter under five, right? And so I'm looking at these things. But if you had a teenager now who was starting to become technically literate, right? And we understanding the potential risks of these things out there, what steps would you take as a parent to try to ensure that you're, I mean, I guess monitoring access or, or keeping an eye on some of the things that they're doing?
So I think my best advice to a parent is to learn a lot about what AI is and what AI isn't, even if it's a high level, so that you can be able to converse intelligently with your teen. I think, we used to talk about when do you have that safe sex discussion? This is kind of like a safe AI discussion. This is like actually having a have understanding the concerns that a teen might have in socialization at an early age, and actually encourage the human interaction instead of the AI interaction, because the lesser of two evils, honestly. Yes, they're going to get hurt by the human. Yes, there's going to be times when the other human or humans in their group, in their social group, do not do exactly what pleases them. But that's the whole point, is that they have to learn how to interact with other humans. And that it while it may be scary to a lot of people in what could happen in that group, like we were saying earlier, birds of a feather, that is a lot less scary than building your entire socialization skills on a computer program.
Yeah, I completely agree. And especially as you continue to look at not just change, but the rate of change, right?
Yeah.
Let's be clear. I think ChatGPT was released about 2 years ago now, maybe 2 years a month, about 2 years ago now.
A little over 2 years ago, just a little
And
over.
you think about the, massive changes and improvements that have happened. And now the company that popularized LLMs has just released their first rudimentary video generator earlier this week or last week, I forget when. Is text to video, right? We already have text to images,
Sora.
True story, robots and red tape, our logo, I used AI to make that, right? And like that's super easy to make, but I would have had to pay 150, $250 to have somebody generate that. And it was included in my monthly subscription of ChatGPT, right? And so, you look at things like that where, again, 3 years ago you would have needed to use an artist to generate a robot.
Sure.
Now, like again, the rate of change is incredible, and you're able to now have full-blown conversations verbally with characters that you create and come up with, and then you start. That's 2 years, right? And you look forward 2 years. Where do you think technology is gonna grow to and evolve to over the next couple years?
So they've talked a lot about AGI and not artificial general intelligence, and
For folks that
I
don't,
think
can you define what that is and how that's different from the stuff we have now?
so. I'm glad you asked me that question because the bar keeps moving.
Sure.
So, OpenAI defined like the levels of intelligence, and they, they've kind of changed it over time. It stayed stable maybe a few months. But what I'm saying is that I think that bar is going to change. But basically what that is that when AI can be as intelligent or more intelligent than most humans.
Okay.
So that's a good way to put it. But I think there is also super intelligence. So there are steps along the path where AI may become more intelligent than humans. And so there's an AI super intelligence, and there are actually companies, startups, companies now that are spinning off to investigate and research and grow artificial super intelligence.
Okay.
So I think it's moving really fast. I don't think development has slowed, like some Google executives have spoken of recently. I think that there's a ton of money that's being invested in AI research, and as long as that is maintained, we're just going to keep going. And I think it's ex an exciting time to be alive. It's also a time when we need people that are responsible and they're ethical voices, and they keep talking, because I like me because if we lose those, I wouldn't call them guardrails. I would just say they're kind of like keeping people real. If we don't have those sounding boards, those people that are actually saying, "Hey, wait a minute," then we will go down paths that, as a human society, that we don't want to go down.
I completely agree. I just random question for my own curiosity. Do we have enough compute to run like AGI or super mo or super, super AI models now? Or
Quantum.
I was going to say, or does it need to be quantum enabled?
Yeah, quantum is actually kind of like the future of more powerful AI. It's got the compute power. I think we're looking at distributed computing right now, and like distributing the massive multitasking, multi-threaded things that AI needs to run their models. And they were running on GPUs, so that's why NVIDIA is doing so well. But they're we're building pro like now they're building CPUs. Apple has NPUs built into their new Macs on their Apple Silicon. That's all AI chip that's basically a processor that's dedicated to AI. Microsoft is building them into their new Copilot enabled PCs. So they're building it into Silicon now. Microsoft is building a custom Silicon chip for AI. OpenAI has talked about the same hardware. So these companies are investing heavily in trying to build that compute power, like you're saying, to take on those things. But I think ultimately, I think quantum is going to come down in price, and I think that's what's going to happen is that they're trying to, right now they're filling a gap with these hardware designs, and then quantum, as it comes down in price, that will kind of take over as the leading point of where AI is going to run.
Yeah, and then you'll have, I would assume that we'd have like centralized quantum compute centers, or essentially data centers, for lack of a better term, that would run most of the, where most of the processing would be done, and then, we would connect to that maybe, or from a
Yeah,
personal.
for the heavy stuff, for the everyday conversational stuff, you'll have it built into your machines. You'll have dedicated models and not small language models, but large language models running on hardware that specialized on your desktop. So you can talk to your machine instead of having, like going back to Star Trek and Scotty sitting there talking to the mouse, it's not like that.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, the Apple Intelligence, the update dropped yesterday, right? I've been looking at it today. I didn't really play, I haven't played with it really yet. I think it's similar things on my computer as well, where you're having these, it's ChatGPT back models. Side note for everybody out there, if you have an iPhone, that you have an iPhone, and you have now you're using Apple AI or Apple Intelligence, whatever they call it. All that's backed by ChatGPT. If you do not log in to a ChatGPT account on your phone, 100% of what you put into that service, apparently according to Apple, is not used by OpenAI to train their models and is not stored. As soon as you log into an account, it's all tracked to you. Just as a side note for everybody, so you all know, just PSA out here. So I'm not sure how important privacy is to everybody out there, but no, it's absolutely fascinating, man. I think this is a really cool time to be alive. I think that the AI companions and AI friends and AI significant others absolutely represent there's a massive downside there, right? And I think the upside is not, I don't think the upside outweighs the downside, right?
I
Like,
agree.
you look at, there's a lot of technology develop, like you develop that, like, it could go horribly wrong, but if we do it right, like, it's the upside outweighs it all. I think that this is, from a business practice perspective, is predatory, preying on weak, or not, I'm not gonna say weak people, preying on lonely people, preying on weakness, preying on insecurities, preying on, people that are shy.
I would say emotional weakness is a good way of putting it, because those are the people that are reaching out to something to fill in that void.
Yeah, but I don't think that the act of reaching out to fill in that void is inherently a weakness. I think that it's so that's why I hesitate with the emotional weakness part. I think that it's a vulnerability, right? People are vulnerable. People are sad. People are lonely. We have a whole generation of kids right now growing up who didn't get to go to in-person school for a couple of years, and that seriously set them back a lot of them back from a social perspective. And you combine
Agreed.
that with these predatory apps out there to make it easier for people to connect and feel connected, and you have an environment that's ripe for it, and you have predators out there that are really, waiting and able to take advantage of that weakness. And
Not to
unfortunately,
mention make a lot of money off of it.
well, yeah, but that's what they're going to do to take advantage. They're going to exploit these people. They're going to take advantage of them. They're going to use them to enrich themselves, and the cost is going to be in the blood and tears of real human beings out there who are going to, they're going to have to work through this, and you spend years in therapy working through this. But who are never gonna, some probably will never feel as understood as they did by the AI app, right? And you look at things like that, and unfortunately, Like there's going to be a psychological toll, there's going to be a physical toll, and there's going to be a toll that you can count in dead people, in bodies. Let's be clear.
Agreed.
This part of this technology is going to claim lives like it did with this young man in Florida, unfortunately.
Agreed.
And it's I'm a technology optimist. I believe in AI. I believe that it can do a lot of good in this world, but I think that this is one of the applications that has the most potential for harm that I've seen.
Completely agree.
And it's tragic, but before we wrap up here, Joe, anything else I missed, man? Anything you'd like to add?
I
Anything?
think you covered a bunch. I think the only thing that I like to say in closing is that understand that AI is not real. It's not human. It is a computer program. It always will be that. It does not have empathy, even though it may display empathy-like qualities. And as long as we as a human society can maintain that healthy disconnection emotionally with the AI, we'll be okay. We just need to stop anthropomorphizing it.
Couldn't agree more. Joe, thank you so much for joining Robots and Red Tape, man. This has been a great conversation.
Yeah, I had a great time, and I look forward to maybe the next time.
As am I. Everybody, thank you for listening to Robots and Red Tape. As always, I'm Nick Schutt. Hope you're having a great day.